It's time for a solid hour of Tea Party Power.
And now, here's Al Gore's Midnight Massage Man, Mark Gillar.
Welcome to the Tea Party Power Hour. I am Mark Gillar. Our guests today, Carol Greenberg, a secret agent who has gone undercover at Organizing for America, has actually legally taken snapshots of their database. And she's here today to talk to us about what she's uncovered. Along with her, a repeat guest, Anita Moncrief, who is the founder of the Christmas Addicts Tea Party in Houston, Texas. And many of you will remember her as an acorn whistleblower. The whole thing never happened, says the New York Times, until she played the voice recording of the New York Times reporter saying they were killing these stories. So welcome to the show, both of you. How are you today?
I'm great. It's supposed to snow here again tomorrow.
I'm in Texas.
Yeah, I'm
it's
in
like
hot
80
Houston,
degrees.
Texas.
Anita, you had a safe trip?
Yes, great trip. I just got to Texas on Wednesday, and I'm really excited. We've got a Tax Day Tea Party tomorrow with Herman Cain and Steve King, so looking forward to that.
And now, where's that going to be held?
In the Woodlands. I'll have to pull up the address and tell you guys about it in a second.
Okay. No hurry whatsoever. Now, Carol, I met you on Twitter, of all places, and I was immediately fascinated that you have gone undercover into Organizing for America. Let me ask you this. When did it occur to you to go undercover at Organizing for America, and what did you hope to find out?
I signed up for emails from them about 18 months ago, and I received an email about a four-hour seminar not too far from my house, and I was very curious to see how they operate and how they teach people. So I went there under an assumed name and gave them one of my other email addresses and learned a whole lot about Organizing for America. However, I have to tell everyone right now that I have discovered since Obama announced last week his campaign for the 2012 election, it is no longer called Organizing for America. It's back to Obama for America, which is what it was called when he was campaigning back in 2008. So that's a very interesting development.
Absolutely. Now, you wanted to find out more about it. You got on the email list, and then that led to you actually visiting these people in person and I guess being taught how to organize. But how do you go from just being somebody on an email list to somebody that has access to taking snapshots of a database? And how long does that take, and how do you do that? I mean,
well, the way this occurred was we were asked to fill out a paper about what our skills were, and I put down computer skills, that I was on Twitter, and I had done some blogging, and a few days later, after this seminar, I got another email asking me to be a part of this online webinar that went through the OFA databases and taught people how to put information in. So I thought, oh, wow, I mean, this is an unbelievable opportunity. And so I went ahead and did it. It was about an hour, and as they were rolling through all the databases, I took screenshots of them, and I still have them to this day, and I've written about them. I put them up on the web, and they're extremely complicated and detailed. We have a major formidable force here with this group. And if I may, Mark, I found this description on a liberal website about Organizing for America, which is now Obama for America. And if you wouldn't mind, it's one paragraph. I would just like to read it because it describes what the organization is perfectly. Okay.
Okay.
We saw in 2008 that organizing a primary campaign apart from the built-in support of the established party can create a national movement for change. A successful campaign has to recruit and organize supporters around the country. It must create its own message machine and rapid response team, and it must create donors and fundraise successfully in order to support all of these efforts. Modern technologies make this even easier than it was in the days of Reagan's 1976 campaign. But to really succeed, the movement cannot be discarded at the moment of the inauguration. And at the moment of the inauguration, or should I say a few days before the inauguration, it was renamed from Obama for America to Organizing for America. And now that Obama's back in campaign mode, it's back to Obama for America. So that's very interesting.
Well, one of the things, and I'm only about halfway through the book, but if you've seen the book Obama Zombies, one of the things that the author talks about is how the Obama people were much more savvy when it came to the social media technologies that were available to them. An example of that would be that John McCain's people only put out about 300 to 400 videos on YouTube during the campaign, whereas I think Barack Obama's people put out something like 1,900. Barack Obama's people came up with Obama Girl. I don't know that anything close to that happened on McCain's side. And one of the things they would do at all these big football stadium-sized rallies is they would tell everyone to send a text message of support to a particular number, and then, of course, that would immediately capture all those phone numbers. So the next time they would go into that town, they would send a personal message from Barack Obama to those text numbers saying, hey, I'll be at such and such location today. I'd love to have you there. And there's something about getting a personal message from a, even though they know it's probably mass-generated, there's something about sending out that type of personal message that gets people to turn out. So I have to say, as someone with a marketing degree, you have to respect how well Team Obama latched on to these various types of social media and made the absolute most of them. I think this time we're going to see a little bit better fight from the right, and the reason I say that is that you probably know that Obama released the first video of his 2012 campaign a few days ago, and that was immediately met with a video from the conservatives that painted what I think is a clearer picture of Obama's accomplishments or lack thereof during the first half of his first term. So I think we're headed for a battle, and social media is going to be key. But let's get back to what you found when you went undercover. I'll be honest, I haven't read the articles yet, but I had a chance to look at them briefly. But tell the listeners exactly what you found when you went undercover.
As far as the databases or... They are very detailed. They log everything. They can... we don't know exactly how many names they have in these databases, but the number that I have seen thrown out there is around 14 million, which is quite formidable, yes. Every time anybody makes a phone call or knocks on a door, or responds to an email, you're automatically put in that database. And these databases can be sorted by precinct, by area code, by address. They can be sorted by how they voted, whether they're Republican or Democrat, whether they're undecided. They also have databases of people that are called rapid responders, which can be pulled up at a moment's notice, and these people are asked to get on the phones, start knocking on doors immediately, and we saw this a lot during the healthcare vote. And in just a couple days, they claim that they made over 300,000 contacts, whether it's by telephone or knocking on a door. This is what I was taught was, or what I was told that they do is, and you'll see this especially around college campuses because the kids love to do this type of thing, is that they set up tables along the street called a phone bank, and they have cell phones there with congressmen's phone numbers on speed dial. And as people walk by, they ask them to call the congressman. They're provided a script, and they're told, okay, the call is free. All you have to do is read this script to your congressman. And that's
wow.
how they did a lot of their campaigning, and the same thing going door to door. They would hand the cell phone to the person who answers the door, and if they're amenable, you know, all you have to do is read this script to your congressman. The call is free. And that's a very formidable force out there. And this is actually how they tossed Blanche Lincoln on the health care vote. I have a screenshot of that. They made over 7,000 contacts in just one day, either to her office in D.C., to people in Arkansas, or showing up at her offices in Arkansas. So this is a way that they operate that the conservative movement has not done yet. And I'm sure that you know, Mark, that the RNC, during the past election, decided that they were not going to do any type of a get-out-the-vote effort as far as person-to-person or phone calls. They were just doing it online or by email. And I'm hoping that they are going to change that and get a real GOTV effort going during this campaign season that can rival Obama for America. But, you know, Obama for America and OFA did not happen overnight. I mean, this took several years. So if the RNC is going to catch up, they're going to have to start doing it immediately.
Well, I think the general feeling in the GOP is that from a social media standpoint and from, if we go to the bigger picture, from a marketing standpoint, we got our tail ends kicked last time. I mean, there's just no question about it. So I would hope that there was a valuable lesson learned and that we will be employing some of these very same techniques. So when you went undercover there, was all well and good, or did you see anything that might be a cause for concern from an ethics standpoint? What else did you see besides the database whenever you got in there?
Oh, as far as the meeting, the seminar, I mean, it was like one big happy family. We went in, we had hors d'oeuvres, we met everybody, we held hands, we introduced ourselves, we told each other a little bit about ourselves. Then they fed us pizza. Unfortunately, there was no beer there, but they filled our bellies. It was a very, very friendly, cordial, one big happy family type of atmosphere. And as far as how they operate and how they run their donation campaign online, see, this is one of the areas where I feel that the RNC has made a huge mistake. If you go to any of the Dem websites, the DNC, OFA, Democracy for America, MoveOn.org, when they ask for money, they ask for $3, $5, $10. When the RNC asks for money, they start out at $100. And
right.
I've even gotten phone calls at home here asking for $500. So, you
right.
know, these people are very smart. They're looking for the volume. They know that they can get a whole lot more people involved if they're only asked to contribute a small amount of money that they can afford. And this is another thing where the RNC has to get its tail in gear here and change their ways. So, I said, it was a very, very friendly atmosphere. And on the telephone, it was a very friendly atmosphere. And then I also was on a conference call well, maybe last summer with the OFA organizer for the entire state of Ohio, and I learned an awful lot then. And that's how I figured out who the OFA people were on Twitter, how to find them, how to find out the information that they're putting out there, how to find their blogs and what they're writing about. So even a little minute little 10-minute phone call can bring a wealth of information. And I'm still looking at these people right now.
It sounds to me like this is the equivalent of having the other team's playbook is what you've brought us.
It is, and I have a lot of papers in writing. I saved all the handouts, and I was actually able to find online a seminar that was televised with the National Media Director of OFA. And they also had a huge PDF file, which was their training manual that I still have. So it's quite, they make it easy to read. Anybody, you know, in middle school can understand all these papers, so they're also smart in that regard, that they make it very, very easy for anybody to understand, no matter what their age or background is. But I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say this is kind of reminding me of many years ago whenever the Japanese began pulling ahead of America in many ways. And all of it really just boiled down to common sense, and I feel that's the same here. A lot of what they're doing is common sense. You know, everybody send us a text, and then you've got all those phone numbers and those phones set up at the tables and so forth, and taking phones door to door. I mean, it's just good common sense marketing. Some people might even refer to it as guerrilla marketing. That was the title of a very successful book about sort of a mom-and-pop marketing and how you don't have to go to Madison Avenue to get things done. And, of course, that was all done before social media even existed. But everything you're suggesting just makes good common sense, but it's also stuff that the RNC isn't doing.
And also one of the other things that they did last summer was they introduced an OFA phone app for iPhones. Now, you've got to remember at the time that you know, there aren't all of these other smartphones out there. I mean, iPhone was the thing last summer, and all the kids have the iPhone. So OFA came out with an application you could put right on your iPhone. And so then they were able to pull those phone numbers as well and, you know, get I don't know if they were actually, well, they probably would have had to have gotten names because I looked at the application form, and you had to put a name and an email address in there. So they're very smart in that regard as well. And I have to say that I have taken a look at the GOP website a lot of times, and it does not hold a candle whatsoever to OFA. I found a lot of mistakes. There's not much of a GOTV effort. There's not many blogs. I've perused the OFA website over and over. I could never find a mistake, never a bad link, never anything like that. So these people are really masters at what they're doing. And this is what we have to overcome. And now I see that they're amping it up again, you know, since Obama's announced his candidacy. I've been peeking in on these people on Twitter.
it's amazing how all these different forms of media have changed our lives. So how did you hook up with the other person on the phone, Anita Moncrief? How did you two get together?
Well, it was actually, we met on Twitter too, and, you know, I knew how savvy she was with Acorn and knew everything about them. And I had started this little website of my own when, it was back when keeping Acorn out of the census, from them being census takers. And then when I went undercover with OFA and got the pictures of these screenshots, I got these screenshots. I had absolutely no idea what to do with them. So I contacted Anita and sent them to her, thinking that if anybody could figure this out, it would be her. And, of course, she did. So that's kind of how we hooked up.
And what did you figure out by looking at the screenshots, Anita?
When I saw them, I immediately had recognized them. I had seen them before, and I realized Carol had stumbled onto something really great and that we needed to get this information out there. Working at ACORN, I realized that the system that Obama used for Organizing for America was based on the ACORN system. Back in the day, they they called it V-Base or voter base, and this was all of the information that ACORN used in collecting from the voter registration drives across the country dating back as early as 2000. They had these palm pilots back then, and they would upload the data into the system, and then ACORN decided that they were going to come up with what they called a list enhancement sharing project, where they had all of these different leftist organizations, including the DNC, that bought into creating this massive database that they could all use. Now, keep in mind that the DNC is not supposed to be coordinating with these nonprofit groups, but they benefited directly from the list that was created by ACORN, and the database was contained by people that had connections back to ACORN and Project Vote. So from that, Carol, I decided that we wanted to do this really big and not just put it on our own personal websites. So I guess posted for her at Hot Air, the first piece where she talked about going undercover. And then I wrote another piece that connected all the dots and showed how this linked back to ACORN Obama and how the Obama was using the ACORN system to get elected president.
Hmm. And the reaction from the mainstream media this time was?
Crickets. Any day now.
you got about as much with this as you did with the previous stories that you wanted to share with the New York Times, I guess.
Exactly. They bury their head in the sand when it comes to Obama and ACORN. And we had proof. We had screenshots. I had documents from ACORN that are unaltered that can be traced back to 2004, 2003 that show that they were working on this massive database that became the system for Organizing for America. We even looked at the people that were running the data clearinghouse, Catalyst, and we found out they were connected to SEIU and just a host of other liberal groups. All of this information was out there with the proof and the screenshots, and it was totally ignored by the mainstream media.
It sounds like liberals do a really great job of working together. You know, I remember the first Tea Party that I set up a little booth at to promote my radio show. Before they let me in, they wanted to know why my dad had voted in a Democratic primary X number of years ago. And I was like, I don't know. Ask my dad. I mean, I don't know. It seems like we're so busy being paranoid of each other instead of working together that we don't achieve some of this synergy that the left achieves when you've got ACORN and the SEIU and Organizing for America all working together. Now, let me ask you a question. This is for Anita. It came out during the 2008 election that President Obama had actually hired ACORN to do some work for him. Now, if he has hired them for political purposes, at that point, is it legal for them to share their database with him?
No, because what happened is that he hired CSI, Citizen Services Incorporated, to do what he categorized at first as lighting and sound, and then had to go back and show that it was Get Out the Vote, GOTV. But the reason why it seemed like it was legal on the surface is because CSI is filed as a business and separate from ACORN. But if you understand how the corporate veil works, then you would know that the same people that were running the nonprofits, the 501c3, are also running the business side, and they're using the C3 resources in order to get Obama elected. So it was all connected. And that was the big thing about the fact that he actually hired this organization when the head person was Zach Paulette. Zach Paulette was also the executive director of ACORN Political Operations and the executive director of Project Vote, which is Obama's old employer.
Right. Where do you see this going? I don't know how many things you can actually bring out of ACORN and have be ignored by the mainstream media. I mean, you've pulled out a lot of extremely important information, and it's almost like you're in a canyon yelling and you just hear your own echo coming back to you. I know you've got it on hot air, and I'm sure conservative media has been quick to pick it up, but these types of stories can't penetrate the mainstream media. I mean, they just circle their wagons around Obama and say, we're not interested. How can you get the word out to independents, for example, as to what's going on?
We're actually working on a project right now that is going to help, because what we need is to get the GOP leadership to step up and to call Obama on some of this blatant criminality that's out there. I have over 55,000 documents that I've been waiting for ISIS committee to subpoena so we can go in and get these people, because if you can't just go after the organization, you have to go after the people. But unfortunately, ISIS was directly threatened by Wade Radke, the founder of Acorn, who on his blog, chieforganizer.org, said that ISA was vulnerable, and so was his seat, and that if he went anywhere near Acorn in the investigations, that he would lose his seat. And right after that, the liberals started a campaign against ISA. So we need to have the GOP leadership to step up and to fight back against these thug-like tactics, and we have to have investigations, because once you start opening these documents and turning over the rocks, you're just amazing what type of worms will crawl out. It actually would be half of the House.
Wow.
Mark, I
yes,
need
Carol.
To add something here, and this
sure.
is what is extremely scary right now, and I'm sure Anita can expound on this, but you know who the director now is for Obama for America is Patrick Gaspard, who is Acorn. David Foos, who ran
that.
Obama's campaign when he became inaugurated, he went on to run OFA, and he resigned, or I guess I would call it resigned, but now he's one of Obama's top advisors. And Gaspard, who is heavily Acorn, is now running Obama's campaign, organizing campaign. And which is really, really scary, because he's going to be able to bring in all these Acorn people and ideas and documents, and I'm sure Anita can expound a little bit better on that than I can, but I just felt I needed to mention that.
Let me ask one quick question about Acorn. What we all heard from the mainstream media is that Acorn had been officially defunded. And the thought that most of us had was, okay, Acorn's going away, but everybody on the right has said, you know, this organization has a gazillion different names. It's this complex web of companies and organizations, and Acorn is still very much being funded by the federal government and still very much in existence, albeit in many cases under different names. Talk to me about just how much redundancy is built in the Acorn system in terms of all the different names that they go by, all the different associations and organizations that they have, and whether or not Acorn is indeed still being funded heavily by the federal government.
Well, that's the thing that most people don't realize, is that they, while they were receiving taxpayer dollars, only 3% of their total budget was coming from tax dollars. The rest of it was coming from private organizations and foundations that were receiving tax credits for their charitable donations to these 501c3s. So when you look at it, you've got the Bauman Family Foundation, the Sandler Foundation, the Tides Foundation, Wellspring Advisors, the Rockefellers, the Fords. All of these millionaires and billionaires are funding Acorn and Project Vote, and that's on top of the Trial Lawyers Association and all of the unions, and I do mean all of the unions out there have given money to these organizations. So when they defunded Acorn, it was more like a joke for the inside of the Acorn family, because they knew that they didn't need that little 3%, and that meant that Soros just had to kick in a little bit more money for that next cycle. And they have these different, over 300 different organizations: Acorn Institute, the American Institute for Social Justice, Project Vote, Communities Voting Together. They're all over the country. They have radio stations that they own. They have newspapers. They have a magazine called Social Policy Magazine, and they're international. While they're called communities organizations, organizations international here in the U.S., they're still known as Acorn International overseas. They've been tied to the political unrest in Egypt. And Wade Rathke is organizing from Kenya to the Philippines to Canada. Nothing has changed. These people have just gone underground. That's why it's important to go after the people and not the organization.
Do you hold out any hope that someone is going to eventually step up in the GOP and take this issue on?
I do. I see people like Steve King and Michelle Bachmann who, even though they're labeled rogue or crazy or whatever, they're the only ones that have enough courage to stand up and, you know, call a snake a snake. So I think that eventually people are going to start listening, but only after we get away from this fear that is the GOP leadership. When I look at Boehner and I look at ISA, they're all concerned about losing power. And as long as that is their primary concern, nothing is going to get done. So it's up to us to hold them accountable and to let them know they will lose their power anyway if they don't do this.
Well, it seems to me that we didn't primary out enough people last time. And I realize everybody wasn't up, but it just seems to me that they're not taking the Tea Party seriously. A lot of people looked at it as, well, gee whiz, I can ride the Tea Party into office or back into office. And it just seems like they've taken our votes, but now that they're there, some of them are falling into the same old politics as usual routine that most politicians fall into. Do you think it's going to take a few rounds of the Tea Party making a difference in the primaries and in the general elections before we start having people actually, you know, carry out some of our wishes?
I don't want to tip my hand too much right now, but I have been privy to some conversations that have been going on recently, and hopefully that will not have to be the case. It looks like there are people that are moving things into place that will allow the GOP to, for the first time, honestly work with and listen to the grassroots. I think in the coming weeks you're going to hear more about this initiative, and I think it's something that the American people are going to get behind because we're playing by a rule book that the Democrats threw out about 20 years ago. And if we can update what we're doing and get on a cohesive narrative, I think we'll be okay. And I'm seeing that that's what's going on right now. And I'm sorry to be kind of secretive about it, but I think that
you're going to
see a big rollout in the coming days, and that the GOP leadership is going to get behind this because they realize they don't have a choice.
That's what I like about you and Star. You always have a secret for me. She's got the gang of 13, which she's not telling me anything about, and you've got this initiative that you can't tell me anything about. So we'll just keep having both of you back until you can tell me something. Now, Carol,
as soon as we roll it out, I'll come back and tell you about it.
Okay, fair enough. Now, Carol, where does this leave you? Have you pretty much burned your bridges as far as being able to penetrate Organizing for America another time? Do you have all the information that you need already? What is your future as an undercover spy?
I'm not really sure yet. I have to go probably out of town somewhere or wear some type of a disguise. There's always that fear that there could be just that one person that could recognize me. So, you know, I don't want to tip my hand that way either. So right now, for the moment, I'm spying on them online and on Twitter and garnering a wealth of information about what they're up to. And since I already know how their database runs and how it works, and I have pictures of that, that's something that's extremely, extremely valuable. Now, one thing that I also would like to add, Mark, is, and Anita knows this, that when you were talking about these guerrilla tactics as far as organizing, there are certain website companies or builders that will only build websites and work with progressives or Democrats.
And yes, they say I that, did like, see that.
They say that right on their website. The same company that built Vote Builder for OFA and the Democrats, the Voter Activation Network, they've also built websites for other progressive organizations. One is California Voter Connect, which is used out in California by the progressives. There's also a Ruby's List out in California that's a coalition of progressive organizations, and they use another company that only works with progressive organizations. So this is another area where we have to realize that they're corralling and they have information that they share amongst themselves. And as Anita was saying, they have the benefit of Harold Ickes' Catalyst, who holds all the voter information, the precinct information, for we think 100% of all the precincts in the country.
Mm.
So what these progressive organizations do is they ask one of these website designers to build their website, and then they are loaded with whatever information they want to pay for from Catalyst. So, for example, the Washington Democrats, they use the vote builder system, and I've looked at their vote builder system. They just have the Washington voters in there. California people just have the California people in there. So, you know, it's just whatever you want to pay for. I have no idea, you know, how much any of this costs. But, you know, this Catalyst is a very, very formidable force because they hold all these records. And the RNC has absolutely nothing like this. I mean, they have the voter vault, which I've been told by several GOPers that I know that have run for office is pretty much of a joke. So that's where we are on that. That's something else we have to catch up on.
So your undercover work essentially accomplished two things. It gave us an idea of just how far behind we are, we being the GOP, in terms of the social media marketing techniques. And by showing the database to Anita, we have proof positive that Obama is essentially using the ACORN database. So it accomplished two very important things.
That's correct.
And yet no one in the mainstream media could care less.
Well, why would they? Because they're not interested in the conservative movement at all. I mean, they're all biased and they're all behind Obama. So, you know, they don't want to know about this. I'm sure that they've seen it, but they're certainly not going to report it or disseminate it in any way. So, you know, I've tried my best on Twitter and on the blogs to try and get this information out, but it hasn't reached the right people yet, unfortunately.
I've seen your efforts there. That's how we met, was on Twitter. And
mm-hmm.
I guess we're all just going to have to keep plugging away at it, because it seems like in the past, just because of the age gap between a lot of the Democrats and the Republicans, the Democrats were just more savvy at this kind of stuff. But I feel that we've caught up in a big, big way. You know, I mean, I've gone in the last 3 years from somebody who used to just surf and, you know, send and receive emails to someone who publishes several websites and has an online radio show. And we're all doing what we can, but it's going to just take all of us working together in a very, very organized fashion. Anita, I think that your case is perhaps the most frustrating to me. When you have a tape of a New York Times reporter saying they're going to drop the story because it's too close to the election, and you can't get any play out of that. I mean, did anyone pick that up?
Bill O'Reilly did, and he declared war on the New York Times, but that was the weekend before the Tiller murder, and they implicated him in that, and so then he went on this national apology tour and moved to the center.
Ah. Yeah, you're saying that Bill O'Reilly moved to the center?
Well, even more to the center than he already was, and he started kind of trying to get Obama on his show, which, of course, he succeeded.
Right, and I got to tell you, and I don't care if somebody sends the link to this interview to Bill O'Reilly directly, his Obama interviews seem to have one main goal, and that's to get the next Obama interview.
Exactly. I mean, I'm like, is his leg tingling? Because that's what it looks like when he's interviewing him.
Yeah, not to steal Chris Matthews' thunder, but I just wonder what the heck's going on with this guy who I thought that O'Reilly, prior to the 2008 election, you'll recall he got that Obama interview just before Election Day. I really thought he was our last chance to really, really go after Obama with some hard questions and make a difference in the election. And he did not take that opportunity. And I'll just say it, I've been disappointed in him ever since. And if you saw the show last night, I do still watch occasionally, he just was going on and on with the viewer mail defending Obama in terms of the birth certificate and everything else. And, you know, to be honest with you, I don't know where the guy was born, but I know he's acting very secretively, very mysteriously about where he was born. And, you know, usually where there's smoke, there's some kind of fire. It may not mean he's born in Kenya, but there's something going on there. And, you know, Bill O'Reilly, realizing that Donald Trump has really gotten people fired up about this issue again, seems to be doing his very best to pour water on that fire. Maybe it's just me, but that's my take. Have either one of y'all seen that?
I didn't get a chance to see that last night. I do think, I can't remember the exact figure, but I think it was quoted at around $2 million. Is what Obama has spent so far in attorney fees and everything trying to cover all of those stuff. Now, it's probably a lot higher than that right now, but, you know, this was very, very heavily promoted, during the election campaign and afterwards. And then, of course, it slowly sort of fizzled out for a while after the past election, but now that, you know, Obama has announced it's picking up again, as predicted. And I, for one, don't know exactly what is going to happen. Anita knows this, and I'm not ashamed or frightened to say this, but I was one of the people in the country, and I don't know if you know this, Mark, but sued the Secretary of State in Ohio here to try and make sure that Obama was vetted properly. And, of course, I lost, but I don't see any reason why he shouldn't have to produce his birth certificate. He's certainly spending a whole lot of time and effort and money trying to cover everything up. So, you know, you wonder, when there's all this time, effort, and money to cover something up, there must be something to hide.
Well, let me take a question from one of my other guests that I've interviewed today, and I'm sure you guys will be familiar with the name, but it's Dr. Caroline Heldman at Occidental. She wanted to know what other presidents have had to show their birth certificate and why we're asking Obama to show his, and implied heavily, not necessarily that it was racism, but it was due to racial fear and our quickness to latch hold of some sort of an accusation being thrown at somebody that's not like the rest of us. What are your thoughts on that? Why are we asking Obama for his birth certificate when we haven't asked anyone else for theirs?
I mean, we don't know nothing about him. Most of the other people that have ran for this office, their information is readily available. When you look at someone, and he has admitted in his book, Dreams of My Father, or whatever the title is, that he doesn't know a lot about his parents' marriage. He doesn't know this and that. He's got a Social Security number that seems to bounce around to a dead person. So I think that we, as American people, have a legitimate need to know what is going on. John McCain was brought up before the House when he was running for president because he was born in the Panama Canal Zone, and he had to prove his eligibility. Why shouldn't Obama?
Excellent question. I wish I'd have had that to fire back with. I'd forgotten about that. But if I'm not mistaken, McCain was actually born on a U.S. military base, which makes him a U.S. citizen. Is that pretty much what they ruled?
Yes.
Well, there's a question about that. What I read after that was that base is not considered actually to be U.S. territory, and therefore many believe or say that he is not a natural-born citizen. That's the opinion of many of the experts out there, and that he was not eligible to run for president either. Now, there was one president that looks like, and I can't think of the name right now, that was supposedly born in Britain. And it was written about, he was written about heavily during, right after the election. And I don't know if Anita can remember or not, but it was someone right around the late 1800s. I'd have to do a look up, but it's pretty certain that he was not a natural born citizen either.
Well, if stuff like this keeps coming out, or Arnold Schwarzenegger is going to wonder why he can't run. Because I remember a lot of people were although I think after seeing him in action as governor, there aren't many on our side that would actually want him to. But I remember people saying how, when he first took office, Republicans were saying how unfortunate it was that Arnold wouldn't be able to run for president one day. Now, update me as far as where things are right now in terms of legal action. The last time you were on and I was doing some research on you, Anita, it seemed like Acorn was suing you for millions and millions of dollars. I think, if I'm not mistaken, you were counter-suing them. Are you still tangled up in legal red tape, or has that all passed?
Oh, no, that case was dropped in March of 2010. The day we were supposed to do depositions of Acorn's top people, they decided that they wanted to settle.
Ah.
Because we countersued that Project Vote was the alter ego of Acorn. And if you understand how they've been able to get over with everything, it's because they try to claim that these organizations are separate. If we had been able to prove in court that Project Vote operates as Acorn and they are the same, it would have destroyed all of that. And the first step towards that was depositions. And they knew that we could get them on perjury, so they decided to settle.
It was just too big a risk for them.
Exactly. And that meant that anything that I had or may have had, I got to keep all of that, which is why I've been hoping that someone will subpoena those documents so we can get the process rolling.
It's just disappointing that... we've got this situation where Acorn is now threatening a member of the House, telling him he won't be reelected, and has that nullified him in other areas as well? Because at first, I mean, what I kept hearing about Daryl Issel is that he was going to be bringing out two investigations or a week or something like that. And, you know, we heard about all this stuff, you know, and he was getting fired up, and it just seems to me like I'm not hearing anything anymore. Not just about this.
Neither am I.
This.
And I actually put that to the people at the dinner I had. I had a dinner with some freshman members of Congress and a couple of senators, and even Eric Cantor stopped by. And that was one of the things I put to Senator Lee from Utah, is to put the fire under ISA and let's get going. iCaucus is going to release that video next week. We're trying to give Senator Lee a chance to respond, because he didn't come off too well in that video. But it does let you know that the Republican leadership is aware of what's going on, but they would rather put it into the realm of conspiracy theory instead of dealing with it. And unfortunately, when you have evidence and proof and people that are, you know, pleading guilty to voter registration fraud and all types of shenanigans, it's hard to make it seem like this is some crackpot theory. And we have thousands of documents to prove our claims.
Well, it just seems like the quickest two ways to dismiss any charges being brought by the right against the left is to either say we're all racist or we're all conspiracy theorists. So it's going to be one of those two in most cases, from what I've seen. What is the possibility of seeing a more diverse Tea Party movement as we grow closer to 2012? I know that I've talked with Star Parker, and she's mentioned the Gang of 13. One of my goals, now, of course, a lot of Tea Partiers are really hopeful that Herman Cain or Alan West will run for president, and I posed that question to my guest earlier. If we're all so racist, then why do so many people want to see Alan West run for president that are in the Tea Party movement? But do you see the African-American and the Latino presence within the Tea Party becoming more substantial as we near 2012?
I do. I honestly see that. It's already started because I think people are starting to realize that even though the GOP leadership has said, and I was actually told this by someone within the leadership, that they weren't even going to worry about minority voter outreach until at least 2016 when Obama got out of office. So not only had they conceded that they could not reach the black voters, but they also were basically conceding that Obama was going to get a second term. So I've seen instead a it was very frustrating, and that's one of the reasons why I've been out on the ground and traveling as much as I have, because I don't think that that's acceptable. And I'm, as a person who lives in Maryland in the black community, I know what's going on right now, and there's a shift in the ideology of people as they start to realize we're paying double for groceries, gas prices are crazy, unemployment rates are crazy, and Obama has done nothing for this black community that he always wants to turn to every time he's attacked. People are starting to question him, and all they need is to have someone come in and educate them and talk to them about conservative principles, because they are the same principles that we hold dear. Most blacks are social conservatives, and we're, once again, back to that initiative I was talking about, we have got a plan that is going to help, you know, open up the minority community to what conservatives are doing in a way that is not seen as offensive or some of the things that the people have said about the Tea Party outreach movement. We're working on an initiative that anyone as an American citizen can get behind, and it's not about black, white, Tea Party, conservative, or Democrat. We're just going in there, and we're going to take back these communities block by block, city by city. So look for some more information on that in the coming weeks.
That's fantastic. That's what we need to have happen. I mean, the Tea Party movement, I know you said it's not just about Tea Party, but it cannot continue to be viewed as an organization of angry old white men and have the impact that we eventually want it to have. I mean, everyone out there is just so concerned that we're a bunch of racists. As I debated Dr. Helbman today from Occidental in an earlier recorded session, a study with 1,200 people supposedly tapped into the thinking of the entire Tea Party, and all of us just think that blacks haven't accomplished the same economic levels because they're lazy. I mean, essentially summarizing what was said in that study. And it's just amazing to me that one study and a handful of signs has been successful at painting our entire organization as racist. And that is absolutely ridiculous. I mean, I am at Tea Parties. I've gone to Tea Party planning meetings. I know what's said when the doors are closed. It's all about fighting socialism. It is all about keeping this country from going off a cliff financially. And Obama's race hasn't come up once in any of the Tea Party meetings I've gone to. And I think that's just a convenient way for liberals to try to deflect a genuine grassroots movement that's frankly about anything but race. And it's ridiculous. So if someone out there is listening and they want to get involved with your efforts, Anita, how do they do that?
I'm Anita at emergingcorruption.com. That's my website that I run to try to expose the corruption that's out there. And I'm also working with the American Majority. We're training conservative candidates across the country, so they'll be ready for 2012. And that's americanmajority.org.
You know, one of the things I keep hearing is that, of course, we're shooting for the White House, but we really need to head in at the ground roots level. We need to be on the city councils. We need to be on the school boards. How important is it that we start making those types of inroads as we simultaneously go for the White House and the House and the Senate?
So we have to start at the ground level, because that's exactly what the Democrats did. They went in and they took over our cities and our states without us even realizing it. So if we don't get out there and run for office, everything from county dog catcher to school board, we're not really going to be making a difference, because they will always have the leg up. These local politicians become national politicians, and they're beholden to the people that have been pulling them along, and those are usually the unions and the trial lawyers. So if we don't take back our communities at the local level, we're not going to have any viable people that can run for office at the national level, as we saw in 2010. Not saying that all of those candidates were not good candidates, but some of them were, it was like we were just taking what we could get. But if we have a farm team of conservative candidates that we can pull from for local and national offices, we're in a better position, and we're less likely to be tripped up by the Democrats.
One last question for both of you. What do you think about Trump throwing his hat in the ring at this point?
Honestly, just to answer this, between the Huckabees and the Romneys and the Pauls, I would actually only vote for Donald Trump because the rest of them, I feel like their time has come, and all they're doing now is muddying the waters.
Mm.
I'm sorry, the time
about you,
has
Carol?
Passed is what I meant.
I understand. Carol, what about you?
I'm still out on that one. I want to hear a little bit more what he has to say. Now, he was on, was it Hannity last night?
I think so, yeah.
I can't remember which one. I think it was Hannity. And he just sounded a little bit full of himself. Now, granted, he is a great businessman. He came back from being totally bankrupt, to having how many millions or billions right now. So he certainly knows how economies work and budgets and what has to be done as far as that goes. So I wouldn't exactly count him out, but I want to hear a little bit more from him. And, you know, when you think about it, whoever thought that an actor from California could become president of the United States, and one that was a former Democrat. So you just never know what can happen out there. That's why I don't count anybody out, but I think it's too early to give an opinion, at least for myself right now. I like the man as far as what he can bring to the table. I'm a little bit concerned about the arrogance that he has right now. So we'll see if he tones it down a little bit and gets into more of a, what I call a lower key campaign mode, assuming that he does run for president.
I think that may be part of his appeal to some people, is that he frankly just gives a straight answer to a question. He doesn't put it through any kind of a filter. If you ask him a question, you may not like how he answers it, but you're going to know where he stands. He's not the kind of guy who's going to say, I'll get back to you on that, take a poll, and then give a populist answer in order to get people to like him. So, well, we are out of time. We can go a little bit past this deadline, but I just wanted to thank both of you for being here. Carol, I wish you the best of luck with your future undercover efforts. Nita, I hope we'll be in touch. I need to make it to one of those Christmas Addicts Tea Parties sooner or later. And if I didn't have an entire house full of people coming this weekend because we're celebrating four different birthdays, I would make a trip to the Woodlands because I'm only about 100 miles away. But I'm going to have to pass this time. But hopefully next time I'll be able to. Join you in Houston.
Thank you, Mark, for having me on.
You're both very welcome, and that is it. Thank you guys for being here, and please keep me apprised of what you're doing. We've got to take this country back. The stakes are too high.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you again. Have a good day.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
Bye, Anita.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to the Tea Party Power Hour with Mark Galar, a production of the Conservative Broadcasting Network.